What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Clock Radio Speakers. Wait, I take that back. This is not just another episode. Doc, this is the 100th episode of Clock Radio Speakers. Can you believe that?
100. I thought that you would have quit the show about 50 episodes ago.
We quit every week. Somebody says something ignorant and the other person quits. So it came from a blog. That's the funny part. Like, you know, we did it at episode zero, but before then.
Yeah, this is really episode 101. I mean,
it is technically. All right. But whatever. Like the very first episode of Clock Radio Speakers, or wasn't even an episode. It was a
blog.
It was a blog. It was when I used to be really, really heavy on my ArmandWakeUp.com, and I had like the top 10 albums of the year, and I didn't just want to do my list. I was like, I want somebody else to bounce a list off of. Whose musical opinion do I respect enough to kind of give them, you know, a platform to allow them to share my platform with them. And Doc and I have known each other since 02.
That's about right.
And Doc has always been a guy. We've always put each other on to like a lot of music. So I respect his opinion. And, you know, from there, we got a lot of really good feedback from the list. And I'd say, was it almost like a year later? I was like, hey, let's just do a podcast.
I think we did a show like that summer. And then actually it was Watch the Throne that made us, we did a Watch the Throne episode.
Yep.
And then we took a couple weeks off. And then at the end of like August 2011, we just decided, yeah, let's just, you know, let's do it every week. And with a few exceptions, you know, that's pretty much been it.
That's amazing. So we really appreciate you guys. You know, sticking it out with us. Pause for these 100 episodes. So this episode, you know, we're really trying to figure out what we were going to do. But, you know, I think Doc and I both kind of agreed that the timing of this is really, really dope. This definitely was not intentional. It was just a, oh, and by the way, just so happens thing. Totally happenstance. My album, Kairos. Mm-hmm. What? Huh? That wasn't happenstance? Nah, come on, B.
I mean, no.
Nah, I had no idea. Like, let's do it around. I had no idea that we were going to do this. But my album, Kairos, comes out this Tuesday, May 21st. So what we're going to do is, as we do with every other notable album that comes out, we are going to break this down track by track, and we're going to tell stories, and we're going to, you know, light at a campfire. We got some s'mores and, you know, I got the French berry lemonade popping. Doc, what you sipping on?
I got some sip half and half, you know.
Okay. And we've also brought some friends with us. If this was Twitter, this would be hashtag Team Kairos. So I've got, along with Doc, three other people who were very instrumental in creating this album from all sorts, every single angle, whether it was musically, personally, spiritually, emotionally, along with Doc, these three people held me down. So they were gracious enough to loan their time out of their busy schedules to, you know, talk about this thing of ours. So we got my man Smurf Village.
What's up? What's up?
We got my man Kellis Hill of TheSouth.com. Do we have Kellis Hill?
I mean, he's still here theoretically. I don't know.
My bad. I had the cue to unmute. The kids were in here. I apologize.
Oh,
no,
you
hello,
good.
Everybody.
And we've got Jaquil, Miss Fashion Under 50.
Hello.
And this is Team Kairos. Look at this little starting five. We need to make them say, no limit leather jerseys.
Nah. As long as I'm not the one hanging on the rim.
I was just thinking. I was trying to figure out who's mystical in this scenario.
Who's the guy in the monkey suit? Remember they had the mascot? Who's going to do the Silk the Shocker scream on their verse? Okay. All right. I'm bugging.
We're already wildly off topic.
All right. So let's talk about Kairos. So as you guys know or may not know, this is basically how Kairos is born. Around January of 2012, I was getting ready to put out another mixtape, which would have been like my 9th, the 10th in 18 months. And I stopped. I went on a hiatus. You know, definitely music was becoming an idol to me. And I needed to kind of sit down and refocus and reorganize my life. So I put down music for about 6 months or so, maybe like four or five months. And while I was there, I was introduced to the concept of Kairos, which is a moment in time that presents an opportunity for change. We'll get all into the details of that as the show progresses. And you know, when it was time for me to kind of jump back in the arena, because this changed my life, I wanted to do as many people as possible. And, you know, while this concept was being introduced to me, these four people are very instrumental. These are people that I talk to virtually every day. I work with them. I hang out with them. I have relationships with them. You know, I do business with them. So, you know, Kairos was originally going to be a mixtape in true mixtape fashion. And I was kind of just bouncing ideas. And I believe it was Jaquil. Were you the first one to say, no, don't do another mixtape? Was that you?
I think it was.
Okay. Yeah, that's what happened, because you and Wit both yelled at me in the same, like, in an hour span. I talked to both of y'all. I talked to Wit first, and Wit was like, you might want to think about making it an album. Wit, who's on the album, Wit of Collision Records, We Live as Kings, Wit, you know, Wit of The Watchmen, Lecrae, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's
name dropping. Like, we're name dropping early in the episode, man.
I am a little bit. All right, it's all good. I have a Grammy award winning producer on my album. How can I not just, you know, little bit? No,
it's all good. It's all good.
Okay, maybe not. All right, so, so Wit's like, no, don't do a mixtape, and I was like, I don't know, and then I called Jaquil, and like. That's when you kind of laid the hammer like you always do, so lovingly.
I think I said it nicely.
Silence. Yeah, it wasn't, you know, you didn't, you know, it wasn't like, if you drop a mixtape, I'm going to hate you forever. It wasn't one of those joints, but, you know, it was definitely one of those.
It wasn't a mixtape.
I'm sorry, if you don't drop an album. But it was one of those, like, you know, you get a whooping and you know that you deserve it, and you know that it's time to do something a little different, and you thank them later. You say, please, sir, can I have another? So, yeah, that was around, I don't know, maybe like April or May. And it's ironic that the first song that I did for the album, I'll say that, because it's not the first song I did, but the first song I did for the album is the intro, which is Genesis Revelation. We can go ahead and go track by track, right?
Yeah, the one thing I wanted to point out is you had all those EPs planned.
Oh my god, I did.
You know, it on the album, actually, is it only on Walk in Contradiction when you say 574 at the beginning?
Yes.
Yeah, 574. So that was supposed to be the EP between myself and Armand. Makes no sense. That was originally for an EP, right?
Yep, me and Pizzy, who did Makes No Sense in Boomerang, and he did Wait It Out, if you guys remember Wait It Out from the original Catch Up. Yeah. Me and him were supposed to do an EP called Insomnia, and it was called Insomnia because he and I would only work after like 2 in the morning, and we work from like 3 until 6. So we've got like 6 or 7 songs done. We were just like up, awake. And then Snooze Button 3.
Yeah, Snooze Button 3.
Snooze Button 3, which ended up becoming Catch Up 2, pretty much, just tweaked slightly different. And what was the other?
Jerome with Sandman?
Nah, not Sandman. Nah, because I wasn't really, I didn't, Sandman had kind of like fallen off the face of the earth. I hadn't talked to him in a while. I don't remember the name of the other EP.
Yeah, but either way, so when you all hear the album and you hear him say Insomnia at the beginning, it makes no sense. You hear 574 at the beginning of Walking Contradiction. That's why.
Yep. Because those are records that were way too strong to just be on an EP. I really wanted to get them out, whether those projects ever saw the light of day or not. They deserved and needed to be heard by an audience. So, but yeah, it's funny that you say Sandman, because Sandman was the producer of Genesis Revelation. yeah. He, yeah. He, He just sent me a beat tape out the blue. Sam, I've known Sandman for as long as I've known Doc. We all met on the same, before social networking, in its definition now, there was like forms, like website forms. So you've got ones now like Kanye Tutta and Nike Talk and stuff like that. You know, there's a website called So, you know, another sphere of hip hop, but the one that we went to was Support Online Hip Hop, which is now the Kali. And
So actually exists.
So still actually exists, but everybody, forum everybody, exist anymore.
Everybody actually, it wasn't like it didn't become the Kali. Like everybody from So left to do their own thing,
which is hilarious. Because and at the end, like the So really like bombed. It really like went to the pits, but. So I've known Sandman forever. He and I have done a million records together. And then, you know, I lose touch with him. All of a sudden, he hits me up on Facebook out the blue. And he's like, hey, here's a beat tape. And he just drops it on my wall. And I'm like, all right, that's cool. And a lot of the beats were beats. And Doc knows that I do this a lot. I'll give somebody an idea. Like, yo, use this sample. And then they'll do it. And then I won't do anything with it. So his beat tape was full of like my beats that he made for me that I never touched from like 2004 and 5. And this one wasn't. This was one that I hadn't heard before. You know, sample of a classic hip hop intro. Anybody know the sample? Anyone? Anyone? Genesis Revelation album? No?
I'm not allowed to answer, right?
No, you're not allowed to answer that.
No. What's that sampling website?
Whosampled.com, which is my favorite website.
Writes that down.
Yeah, Kill, you love that site. That site is amazing.
Yep.
And they actually have an app for iPhone too. So
I'm probably gonna download it then. Because I was just listening to some other stuff. Go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry.
But the sample was, go ahead, Doc.
It's a little group called Outkast. AT Aliens intro, right?
Yep. You may die.
I was
really,
man. I was wondering why something about this, man. Okay, that clears it up. God, there was something about that song that just it reminded me of something, but I couldn't put my finger on it. So okay.
Yep. So you may die. This was actually the first rhyme that I had written since after I got off my hiatus. That's why I say, you know. Hadn't wrote something in months, feels like years, smiles felt like tears, like because that was really my first time shaking the rust off of the ink pen and writing again. And I don't know, this one really doesn't.
Good stories here. I mean,
yeah, this one has a story. The second verse,
talk about that.
That's a real story. That's a real story.
So, first of all, if you're listening to this and you haven't heard Genesis Revelation, you can just pause the podcast right now, go to armarwakeup.com and listen. And then, so why is this, what is it about the second verse, man?
Okay, so, you know, can I tell the whole story, Jaquil? Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, get ahead. So,
So,
you're stupid. So, me and Jaquil go to a concert, which was, was it in Autumn's Ear release party? Kellis, what was Javis's album that he dropped earlier this year? Smurf, History in Progress?
History in Progress, yeah.
Yeah, that one, yeah.
Yeah, because Smurf was there. Shout out to his story and all that other stuff. But so we go, Kill and I go to the concert, and, you know, it's at this church, whatever, it's at this well-known church in the city of Columbus. And we walk in and there's two women that are selling tickets. Yeah. And no, not two of them. Not both of them. One of them wasn't, because one of them I know because we work together.
So she was still eyeing you. So
nah, what? She wasn't.
So set the stage. Is this like clean shaven Armand, like on the cover of Dreaming Out Loud, or is this like freeway?
This is Wolverine Armand.
Like Philly beard Armand.
Philly beard. Yeah,
this was totally Philly. This was like I'm well into the album, because I didn't write the second verse until way after. The song was originally just a verse and a piece of like a hum of the hook. So this is like well into the summer. Like my beard is crazy. I know this. That's how you can tell. Like what part?
My bad, Jaquel. You said Wolverine armor.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I like him with the beard.
That's funny. I'll start calling you Logan.
What you got to say, bro?
Nah,
Logan. Yes, let's call him Logan.
Nah, nah. I'm cool. It just kind of like registered when she said, "No, don't go ahead. Go ahead."
Okay. All right. So, you know, me and Jaquel walk in and whatever, and there's the two ladies taking tickets, taking money for tickets and stuff. So, the one that I know, I work with her. We're talking. She's like, "Oh, hey, da da da." So we're talking, and the other chick that she's with is just staring at Jaquel and I. And all of a sudden, she just interrupts the conversation. She's like, "Is that your girlfriend?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she was like, "Well, you don't talk about her on Facebook." And I just looked at her. And Jaquel, did you see that?
I did. I was peeved. I was like, what in the?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because I wanted to make sure that I handled it. And I kind of looked back at Jaquel, and then I looked at her and I was like, nah. I just kind of looked at her and I just walked in. And then.
No, because afterwards that set it off. That set something off for you, like realizing that how closely you're being watched, you know, on every end, not just musically, but like when people are musically into you, they look at everything, every aspect of you.
Yeah. 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 That's a lot of what this album is too, is kind of realizing, you know, a lot of us don't really feel the eyes that we have on us. And this was definitely like, I realized that I had eyes on me for more than just, hey, he's a rapper. And the funny part about it is she's not on my Facebook at all. And I have, to this day, I have no idea who that girl was at all. So.
Facebook is the capital for online stalking, man.
Man. I just locked down, sir.
You think so?
It's the new age.
She's using a friend's account to creep on you.
I have heard, Doc, I have literally heard of that. I have friends who have been stalked, and they have friends who have created accounts and just...
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild.
This world's going downhill.
I shut my Facebook down like 2 years ago, so I'm free. I'm free.
That's what you think, man.
So... Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it with Genesis, I believe.
Well, nothing, so let me ask you, what made you want to make it the lead single?
I mean, the concept of the hook. I remember walking around my work's parking lot at like 10 in the morning writing a hook. It was like 100 degrees outside. And I just kept hearing Genesis, Revelation. Obviously we know Genesis is the first book in the Bible. Revelation is the last book in the Bible. You know, also means beginning and ending. And I wanted to, you know, I mean, I swear the hook just kind of set the tone for it. Like, you know, it must be revealed before we can revolt. Like, we have to know what the revolution is before we can even call or treat it as it's a revolution or as it is. So, you know, what better way to set it off to say, hey, this, you know, take this serious. This is something different. This is something that you're not used to. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you, this is like, if you're in the military or if you're like if you play sports and your coach is drawing up the plays on the whiteboard, and then you see where you're supposed to go. And now when you get out on the court, when you get out on the floor, now you know where to move. That's what this song does.
Yeah.
I also liked, like the verse that stuck out to me was like how you use perception. Like, you know, what's $5 to me? You know what I'm saying? Like how we perceive things also adds to how things can be revealed to you before you can revolt. I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
I remember us kind of talking about it before you dropped it. I think the biggest thing for me is when I hear that song, it puts me in a different mindset. You know what I mean? So I thought that rather than choosing a single the way that majority of people, I mean, I want to say 99.8% of people choose singles, which is based on what is so-called popular or based on what will make people I guess for lack of a better way to put it, something that's familiar enough to what's popular for people to latch on to it. Mm-hmm. Problem was is that they often latched on to those singles mindlessly. So I felt like this one was like crystal clear. This is we're trying to bring something to you different, you know, yeah. that is just purely clear, mm-hmm. not just trying to get you to blindly back this album just because it sounds hot. Like, you know, this the beat is infectious. I'm just right. that's the best word I can put it. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know all the feedback, but I know it was more than, man, who produced that, or man, you know, he spit. It was more than that from what I saw.
Yeah. So. What is that? Whose is that?
Who's
is hello? That? Is that Sandman who did
it? Yeah, that's Sandman. Yep, yep, yep. Shout out to Sandman. Yep, his only record on the album. He had a couple of records. Actually, the next song on the album, he really tried to produce.
Uh-oh.
But he's got a...
We'll tell the story behind that one. Wait, that was his beat?
Yeah, kind of, sort of. Huh?
That was his beat?
No, that was another guy. I'll tell that story when we get to it, once we wrap up Genesis. Anybody else have anything? Smurf?
I just remember you recording at the house. I remember you coming in and... He was like, "Yeah, I got a single. I want to record the single." And I'm thinking that I ain't gonna front. I was thinking in the back of my head, like, "How you picked the single already, and you just really just started recording everything?" But after I heard it, I was like, "Okay, you may got something here." So
it definitely set the tone. Like, I think Genesis yep. Revelation sets the tone for the album. Because, like you said, Kellis, it's very clear. It's like saying, like, this is my declaration, and the follow through is the rest of the album. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just my last point on this is that, I mean, across the board, a lot of music has become mechanical, and this feels organic. So, right. you know.
Yeah, the whole Kairos is. Feels organic. Yeah. It's different. It's different from yep. what everything else is out there. So it's yeah. It just completely has a whole completely different feel to it. So yeah.
Thank you. All right. So we're going to the next song, next track.
Yeah, we can talk about track two.
All right. So track two is This Is Kairos. This is like the theme song to the album. You know, every superhero needs a theme song, right? Who said that? Was that Jack? Who was that? Kill was that? I'm gonna get you, sucker.
Yes, that is. I'm gonna get you, sucker. That is like 12 points. You just got 12 points right
man,
now.
Wow,
I'm about to watch that tonight, man.
So, I remember the part. Remember the part where he got shot and his foot got big? They used to freak me out as a kid. Yes. And the midgets. Yeah. That was my first time. I'm sorry. That's my first time seeing smaller people, little people. I was like,
I think those little people is more hurtful than midgets.
Is it?
To me,
that's not what they say.
I know they want to be called little people.
I don't. All
right.
I just call my wife short. Well, if she hears that, she's gonna be mad at me.
About to get jumped, dude.
Right? Yeah, you and your kids about to her and your kids about to tie you up to a railroad track, yo. Yeah, so This Is Kairos originally was produced by Gito. Gito he sent me a whole bunch of beats, some crazy beats that I sat on too. But you know, when you're in project mode, you kind of know, you'll know what it is when you hear it.
Yeah.
And when I heard the record, when I heard the beat he used, he used a sample of Order My Steps. And I was like, oh, snap, this is crazy. And we laid that down really, really quick. We got that mixed really, really quick. There's a couple records on this album that were just like boom, boom, boom. I actually got inspired to do this record hearing some Meek Mill. This was in my little Meek Mill phase. So the hook is kind of inspired by stuff that he does. I remember listening to Dream Chasers and I was like, and just being inspired by that and trying my own thing. That's why it's kind of like call and response, like a lot of Meek hooks are. And then what happened was Did I get like I believe I got mixed feedback on the song. This is before you doc. But I think I think Kellis and Smurfy both I don't know. Like, how did y'all feel about the original version of the song?
Well, I remember you sent, I think when I saw it in the Dropbox, there was the one with the sample you mentioned, and then also there was a version with the I believe it was something from the Cosbys. I don't know who produced that. I don't think that was Gio.
Yeah. Nah.
And we'll get to the Dreamer later, but it was where it's like lyrically, yes, but the beat, I'm like, I'm not sure. It's just, I couldn't wrap all the way around it. I don't know. You know, it just wasn't, it wasn't even a love it or hate it thing. It's just indifference in a lot, in some ways.
What about y'all? What about Smurf and Kill? What y'all think when y'all first heard the original version of Kairos?
I like the original version of Kairos. I told you, I mean, when I feel like part of me is happy that I stopped and then just waited till the end. But then a part of me is like, oh, I wish I had listened through, because like it just sounded entirely different to me. But I told you that when I heard it, like it sounded. I mean, I guess it sounded like, you know, you go away and you have like a newborn, and then you come back and homeboy is like 3 years old talking about I eat carrots. That's kind of what it was. I don't know. I don't have kids, so I hope that analogy works.
I feel it. When I heard it, I mean, I liked it. I liked the live instrumentation. Well, it had the live instrumentation feeling. It kind of, you know, and then, well, you ain't talking about the new one yet, but the new one was... that one's nuts. So I mean,
I did like the throwback, the Order My Steps throwback, like that. I mean, because I'm a old school, like,
yeah.
I come from church. So like when you throw in, like, I think that is gonna like appeal to, it may appeal to people. So like, oh, that's Order My Steps, you know?
Right, right.
But I mean, I think I think it's a dope nod to gospel music. Because, I mean, you know, most people, I think, like, what I've heard in Christian hip-hop is, you know, you guys work so hard to make a lane for yourself, you almost kind of don't want to merge with other genres in your family.
Right.
Because you're trying to make, and, you know, rightfully so, I understand that, but I think it's, and sometimes you can kind of, your words get lost in, if you use a beat that's too familiar, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but, get too comfortable. Yeah.
It's
tough because, like that song, my parents played that song like almost every day when I was growing up. Like Sounds of Blackness and all. I mean, that's just like all kind of gospel. I mean, so I like the sample, but I don't know what it was. I've heard Gito. I think he helped produce on Hell's Paradise 2. I forgot which episode. I think it was episode 1 or 2. I forget. So I think he helped produce. Yeah, I think he helped produce the beat he featured on, I think. Mm. So when I, knowing a bit of Gito's production, I didn't feel like it was his best. So I would tell Gito that, like, if I have to hit him up on Twitter and say, look, when you hear Clock Radio, this is what I said. So, hey, straight up. Like, there's no surprises. I'm being straight up. But so it wasn't that the beat was bad, but when I think Kairos, I think of obviously a moment of clarity, but in the moment of clarity, I think there's a guy, and that beat didn't necessarily dock. I feel like the sample he used and the way he laid the drums, it brings a little bit more of a upbeat feel to it, I guess.
Mm. Yeah.
So let me go ahead and tell the story behind this. So and again, no offense to the dude who produced the original version. I'll probably be strong arming Armand, but I wanted to try my hand at this track. So what actually happened was when we were trying to make this, we were trying to figure out what to do with this beat. My wife's grandmother passed away, and we were actually pretty close, and it was kind of emotional time. So actually, the night I made this beat and found this sample was when we found out. So this was cathartic for me. Right. So, like. that sample's chosen. That, I mean, the way like the intro goes, like, so the structure of the beat is because that's how the, like, the original beat sort of had those different like sections to it, right? Like there was sort of a, I don't even call it a bridge because it's sort of a really uniquely structured beat. But so I sort of had to work around that, which, I mean, in a way actually worked out really well. It sort of forced me to be a little creative.
Right.
But yeah, like, what, like, for me, like, I hear that beat and I'm instantly like taken back to that exact moment. And it's emotional for me. Like the whole, I mean, like, I always joke with Armand as I was like mixing and, you know, mixing the song down, and we worked on this song, I mean, my goodness, probably nonstop since February. Like,
yeah, that was one of the last records we did.
Yeah. Just trying to, yeah, this, I mean, it was the last record really, right?
Yeah, technically, yeah.
I mean, we did this, we did this after Catch Up 2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it was just, I guess emotional is the word I want to use. So, like, I always joke with Armand as we were making it that I would, like, you know, Puff Daddy's circa 1997, like, spin around and sort of, like, dance move. But, and really, like, if, like, it's kind of funny to say, but, like, how he is in, like, the I'll Be Missing You video, like, that's weirdly how I feel when I hear this beat. Like, this beat just means that much to me. So,
damn, I missed the Cairo story.
Yeah. So,
stupid internet, yo.
for everybody listening, we'll try to figure out how to edit this, but in case y'all actually do hear it, we dropped our mom for a minute. My problem is I think way too highly of this beat. Like, I can't rationally talk about this song because I think it's just the best. So I was a little concerned, you know, like, it's the song that I probably spent the most time mixing, even though it's not even the most complex one. That was probably P90X, just because there was six different guys on it. But like, I just kept working and working. Actually, this and Dreamer was just working and working and working. In fact, I think I did the last mix for this like a week ago.
Yeah, about a week ago.
Yeah. It just didn't feel right. And like, when I'm doing mixing and Armand is giving feedback, you know, I got to test on my iPhone headphones. I got to test on my studio headphones. I got to test on my studio monitors. I got to test on my car stereo. I got to test it. It's got to sound perfect everywhere because I obsess over that a little bit. But this song was such a process. And to hear that people like it just means, like, is out of all the songs, like, that's the one that means the most to me. So I know that as soon as I read the first person who, like, give feedback they don't like it, I'm just going to have to turn off Twitter. Like, I'm just going to have to walk away and be like, all right, it's all good. Nobody can love every, you know, people aren't going to love, everybody's not going to love it, so that's all right. Yeah. So.
Can we talk about these skits real quick?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yay! Man.
Yeah, so, Doc, was it your idea to do the skits? Was it my idea?
I think you wanted to do skits. It was my idea to put the music behind it because go ahead.
Kellis said something. That's what it was. I kind of wanted to. I thought about it, but I hadn't verbalized it. And Kellis just out the blue was like, "Yo, you should do some skits." Wasn't that a conversation that we had?
Yeah, pretty much. Because I knew that because of what you were trying to do with the whole concept of Kairos, that it would be helpful in some way to explain it. And y'all knocked it out the park. I like the fact that it was at the end, pretty much at the end of songs, and it wasn't like a separate track. Or I've actually one time I remember some CD where they put the skit at the beginning. you had to wait for the skit to play. So, but yeah, I remember that.
So somebody caught. Somebody caught the tribute and the homage that the skits represent. I'm just gonna let that person, who's obviously totaled themselves.
I love A Tribe Called Quest. The minute I heard it, I was like, "That's like Midnight Marauders."
I'll take credit for that. That was my idea.
Midnight Marauders, he was like, Doc did that. I'm like, I like Doc.
I was, because Armand sent me the audio to all the skits, and so I, you know, I mixed all those down, and I don't even know if you told me to put a beat behind it or not.
I didn't want a beat behind it. The beat that you used, you had sent to me a while ago, like a month prior, and I was like, yo, this is dope. It doesn't really fit with, it didn't fit with anything I wanted to do on Kairos, but I was like, yo, this beat is dope. Let's put it off to the side in the event that we do something later on, you know, again, me hoarding beats again. And but I was like, no, I wanted it to be all dramatic and don't have any music behind it. And I did all that, and Doc was like, no.
And what, you know what it was? It was when I heard the first one. Because the first one, the who does the first one?
The first one is a coworker of mine, my homegirl named Tiffany. She did the first skit.
Okay.
And she probably did that take, I want to say, at least 40 times.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Like, she, it took her like an hour and a half to do that whole, to do that skit. She was like, she'd do the skit, then she'd hate it. She'd go outside. She'd walk around. She'd come back in, you know. So, yeah, it took a while. And that actually wasn't the last. You know how you can, like, overdo it sometimes?
Yeah. You
know, where you have the take.
You think? But,
yeah, right. You have the take, and then you say, no, I want to try it again. So you do it, like, 20 more times. And you go back and you listen to it, and you're like, the skit we did on take 17 is better than take 42. So that's what ended up happening. I went through the skits and I was like, yeah, we're not using those last ones.
So I heard the first one, and just the way her delivery reminded me a little bit of the woman's voice on Midnight Marauders that's doing those skits. And I was like, so the beat I chose, I mean, that's a very throwback beat. I mean, that's about as famous of a sample as it gets, right? That's can I talk about samples on this? No, we... All right, never mind.
Not the less obvious ones. No, there's some really obvious samples on this album. There's some not right. So obvious.
I'm just gonna say there's a couple famous samples in that one beat, but you know, I thought it actually worked really well, and then I just wanted to somehow make it tie in, so I found the tape effect, the you know, press button, like, and the little noise for the sound like a cassette tape, just to complete the whole experience.
Yeah. Word.
Yeah, that was okay. Dope.
So I guess we can go. What's next, marathon?
Yeah, we got 38 minutes in. We're only on marathon. This is gonna be a long show.
We're on track three. Okay, well, there's really no really interesting story behind marathon. You know, Cambino's one of my favorite rappers ever, and you know, I knew that when I was getting, I have a. We'll talk about this a little later. I guess we'll probably talk about it with P90X, but I have a lot of guest appearances on the album, which is very anti-clock radio speakers, but I intentionally did that, and I'll talk about that a little later. But, you know, that was one of the earlier records that we did when it was originally a mixtape. And the record was just too crazy for me to sit on. And, yeah, I mean, there's really no story behind that. It's just, I just really like that song.
Yeah, I'm gonna hijack your show. And real quick, speaking of things that are very anti-clock radio speakers, can you address the fact that this album is 79 minutes and like 51 seconds long?
And I guessed it.
And 17 tracks. Should have been 18, but we didn't have time.
I mean,
considering what we've done for the past 100 episodes, that doesn't sound like we're taking our own advice.
No, it doesn't. But I also preach on the album. I also preach on the show to make the album that you want to make. And even if it goes against the system, if it goes against what you normally would attest, and even what you like to hear, you got to eat that. And you know, a lot of feedback from the album is that, yeah, it's long, but okay, I knew that going into it. So, you know, I felt like every single song was necessary for the album. Everything that I said, I didn't, you know, sometimes, like, the reason why tapes and projects get monotonous from people is because they say the same thing in four or five songs when they could have just condensed it and said it one time, you know. And I kind of like to do that. I like to, I'm only saying it once. It's kind of how, you know, I parent to a fault. I only want to say this once, right, and let's move on. So, you know, each concept was so necessary to bring the full Kairos experience home that it was just necessary. So if people think it's too long, so be it. I'll take it. I'll take the hit on that, because that was my decision, because
I know Kellis and definitely Doc was like, cut some records. And I was like, I fought for him.
I was offering my own to cut up. I was like, cut it.
Nope. I almost thought about cutting it, but I couldn't. The concept of that song is the concept of Kairos. It's like, I can't cut it. Sometimes in this case, some of the decisions were ministry based and were what's the word I'm looking for? Conceptually based more than musically based. Like sometimes one has to sacrifice for the other. And in this case, the message without a record like Change My Mind, this Kairos sounds totally different. And somebody may not get the concept because that's pretty much what Kairos is about, changing your mind. So I couldn't have done that on another record, and I didn't talk about it on another record as in detail and as in depth as I did on that song. So all of them were necessary.
Yeah.
So what's next? Poor Effort?
Poor Effort.
Poor Effort was actually like the first. Poor Effort is funny. Poor Effort is hilarious. Poor Effort is produced by Wit. Shout out to Wit. Wit sent me a beat like a year and a half right before I went on hiatus, because I'm in Haviland Savage mode. So I'm thinking love, relationships, and all that stuff. And he sends me like, it's the beat that he sent me wasn't the beat that you hear on the album. He sent me a totally different beat, and it was cool. But I was like, I'm not in rapidy rap mode. I'm not there. And that was another one of the records that I ended up doing at Smurf's house, the same installation. Because I think, Smurf, how many records did I do that day? Like 4, 5?
You did like, I think it was like 6. Actually.
Yeah.
It was something crazy.
Yeah. I did 6 records that day, and that was one of the records. And I sent it to Wit, and Wit was like, no. I'm not, no. He was like, give me 2 hours. And I got an email 2 hours later, and it was the beat that you hear now. And I had to go back and re-record it. And then that's when I was having studio issues, mic issues, all this other stuff, all this other crap. And originally the record was going to be called Caesar. I was going to go with the whole gorilla concept because of the invisible gorilla crew. And when I found out that Cash Hollister was going to do a record called Gorilla, I was like, let me do something different. So that was a record. That's actually the last record that got, that was one of the last records that got done outside of Doc and I.
Sounds completely different from the original.
Yes.
Completely.
I remember being in your house when he was doing a poor.
Yeah. It's not
gritty enough.
Yeah.
That was horrible. Yeah. Oh, and then Smurf's wife was getting mad because I was growling too loud.
Yeah, my wife was looking at me like, what's going on? I was like, look, we working. It's nothing. So
and that record really finally just came together. Like, finished in terms of, like, mixing and mastering. Yeah,
down to the wire. I mean, that was one of the records that we, you know, like, we just had to get it done. You know, we're super busy, and we have a deadline, so, you know.
Yeah, we're, you know, I hope you're all right. I hope you don't mind the mix. That's me. So, you know, I totally understand when producers want to mix songs that they make. I mean, that's how I am, so. You know, I'm not trying to step on any toes, but deadlines, man, they're killer.
Yeah, definitely. That's why I highly recommend, even though this is going against my own advice, don't set a release date until you have everything done.
Oh, my goodness.
There's so many lessons learned from this album, yo. That's one of them. So, what's next? Dreamer. I'm going to let y'all talk about Dreamer. I'm done.
So, Kellis, I know you're not a big fan of Dreamer.
Well, let me say it this way.
I'm okay with that. That's fine.
No. Let me say it this way. When it was fully mixed and mastered, when I heard that version for me, it was kind of like that new teammate, the guy that just transferred in. You know, he shows up on the court. You know, you hear supposedly good things about him, but you freeze him out for the first half of the season. So I just wouldn't pass the ball to Dreamer. But finally, when I heard it, mixed and mastered,
like Tony Kukoc,
you pulled the Isaiah Thomas in the All Star game. That's
like Jordan and Pippen and Tony Kukoc.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, because it's like this. Number one, Coldplay, love the sample. The drums were basically what had to grow on me. But then once you mix and master and everything came together, I was like, cool, let's go. You know, because I heard it, I guess, in this, well, you said there's another version. I've kind of seen my
Dropbox. Like 12 versions.
Well, it's...
I saw probably the first 11 versions. I just got to get this other one. But, at this point, I really like it now. I listened to the last closest to newest version at least 6 times, and I was like, okay, I'm good now.
I had like a psychological breakdown practically making the song. Like, I really lost myself in that beat. Like, I got to a point where I just forgot what the original like version actually sounded like, because I just kept going deeper and deeper into like trying to make the mix fit with the sample and all that other stuff. And
that beat is old.
Oh my god, that beat is old. I don't make beats like that anymore. Not like that I don't like that beat.
Doc didn't even like. Yeah, like you didn't even like. I, like that, that's kind of what me and Doc do. Doc will like try to push beats on me that I don't like, and I'll be like, no. Or I'll pick a beat that he just kind of made on a whim, like, hey, check this out. And I'm like, this is the craziest thing ever. I'm recording to it right now. And he's like, this? So there's rare occasions where he and I click, like, walking contradictions, like the Catch Up 2 intro. But more often than not, we're usually, like, on opposite pages, which is hilarious.
Yeah, I honestly forgot what this sounded like. What album was it recent? What did we do? Oh, you know what it was? When we were prepping for the Neptunes retrospective that we did a couple months back on Clock Radio Speakers, I just, if you listen to their old stuff, it is defined as much by what's not there as what is there. Space is a very important part of the Neptunes music. And the clarity, I was listening to it and I immediately was like, oh my goodness, I am mixing this song completely wrong. I went back to the very original early versions of the beat that I did, made some changes, sent something to Armand that wasn't final, but he was almost immediately like, oh. He's like, what? You're back.
It was different. Yeah, it was different. It was totally different. Totally different.
And we're talking nitpicky, nerdy stuff, but it matters. At least I tell myself that.
It matters. No, it does matter.
No, you're right, though. You're right.
Yep, everybody's a nerd about something.
Man.
Yeah.
Yep. Anybody else got any other feedback for the Dreamer? Bueller? Okay, well then let's talk Love Is.
The Chick Love record. Even though it's the record, it's not even the record that girls like. As if you say that only girls like a record, but blah, blah, blah. Yeah. This ain't the Chick record, really, is it?
I mean, girls like it, but I'm surprised about some of the other records that women like on this album that are like totally, you know.
I can't wait to talk about
like,
that.
Like the story. I used to do this a lot. Like when I was like 17, 18, and we used to go to house parties. And this was back in my battle rap days. Like we'd all go in a room. Like it's so corny in retrospective, but like there'd be a house party. There'd be a bunch of girls there, and we're in this side room having this giant cipher. And I don't care about the girls in the other room. I'm worried about destroying every single person who thinks they're a rapper. I'm going to go in that room. I'm going to say one verse. It's going to shut the whole cipher off, and I'm going to leave. And those are, normally the girls didn't watch those ciphers. They were in the other room. And you know, some of the songs on the album, those are the ones that's just like the girls in the room watching, they're dancing to the cipher, like, all right. But anyway, Love Is super old as well. This was supposed to be on Haviland Savage Theory to Residue. This was supposed to be the first single. This was supposed to be the first single before Genesis. I had gotten hold of this beat a long time ago. I just got it like randomly, like people just randomly email me beats. I kind of wanted to tackle what love was to a lot of different people, because love is different to everybody, or it can be, or their definition of love. And, Jay Carter is like a really good friend of mine. He's like one of my little brothers that I kind of mentor. I met him through Pizzy. And
I mean, that's just the record. It's record is dope. It was like it was a record like it took us forever to finish it just because Carter was so busy. And, you know, he's getting married, he's having a kid and all this other stuff. And then just out the blue, he sent it to me. And that was it.
Bruh.
Like, I knew immediately that.
I was still in New York when you were doing Love Is.
Yeah.
Bro, that Jay Carter just killed it, dog. I'm waiting for his album, dog, because that dude, bro. Yeah,
he's dope.
he's super dope.
That's another record I kept trying to change.
That was another. What you mean you were trying to change it?
I kept trying to remix that record. Remember? I kept trying to throw drums on
that. Yeah, we were trying to do like a 90s remix.
Yeah,
that
just
like
never get it.
Yeah, Puff Daddy Soul Power remix.
Yeah, I want to throw them like, you know, 93 Puff Jack and Breakbeats drums on that. Although ironically, trying and failing with that led to me getting on the Breakbeat kit.
Yeah, to catch up to intro. Oh, tribute to DJ GQ. A lot of those catch up two beats were inspired from that.
I mean, heck, P90, which we'll talk about a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
Whoa! All right.
Right.
Anyway, so but yeah, you know, Jake, I can't have I what about else have I heard from Jay Carter? Anything?
He was on Chevy Impala Music too.
Thank you, but no, his like his whole ending part of the song it's pretty dope. I'll give him that.
Yeah, that brings it home because I'm basically posing questions and that bridge or his verse is like the answer. And I didn't want to. This is what I wanted to do. And I'm just gonna say this. I'm just gonna say it. You guys got to stop. You guys who are using Jay Carter on your hooks, you got to stop pigeonholing him. You guys are pigeonholing Jay Carter.
Yep.
I met Carter when he was doing R&B music. So I know that I've had conversations with him where he was beginning to start, you know, he had given his life to the Lord and he was trying to figure out, you know, do I make love records? Do I make songs for God? How does this work? And, you know, I was trying to get him on that. Like, yo, you can still sing about love and sing about relationships and it's still glorify God. Like, you can do both. But I mean, some of his R&B stuff is still to this day incredibly dope. So, you know, now all I hear him on like those kind of popish beats, which is cool because he can do that lane as well. But I wanted to take him back to his roots. Like, this is why I fell in love with Jay Carter, the artist, because you made songs like this. And I just let him go to town, let him do his thing.
Now, let me get an A&R mode, man. Somebody got to get with that cat and create an album. Like, don't throw him a bunch of pop beats, but somebody has to create an album with that guy, man. For real. Yeah.
Like some organic.
Yeah. He's got some resources, man. He's got some stuff in the works. He's definitely going to have a really good 2013 and an even better 2014. So
cool.
What's next? Frostbit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Frostbit, another mixtape record. Sean C. Johnson on the hook. No, there's really not really a whole lot other than the story of the poem at the end. I wanted to make sure that I got Barb on the album. Barb is my homegirl, immensely talented, very well known poet out here in Ohio. And you know, I just wanted to make sure that I got her, that I wanted to give her a larger platform for her talent. And you know, I can now I can't imagine the song without the poem.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah,
it brings everything home because that song was done for like 3 or 4 months.
Mm-hmm. I think that's gonna be a favorite. I mean, I'm not gonna be surprised at all to hear a bunch of people talk about how much Frostbit jumped out at them. I think I like the fact, like, I'll put it this way: most other rappers would have made this a first single because Sean C. Johnson's on it.
Mm-hmm.
I like the fact that it's not, and it'll be something where people say, oh, I see he's on the album. And then he killed it, of course. But I like the fact that Armand, you know, there's no question. I think from the minute that I met, online met Armand, what, 2011, 2010?
Yeah, it was 11. It was right. It was late 10, early 11, because this was after Dreaming Out Loud.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because I remember that when I went to the Around Wake Up, that's when I started the miscellaneous. 2010 was really what I got familiar with. But yeah, I think a lot of cats would have said, well, I see Sean C is out there, so let me go ahead and put this out there. I like the fact that it's going to be something that people are going to appreciate off the album. So
it's my son's favorite song, man.
Oh, that's why I'm going to create a dance off that, man. Two step.
Yeah, and I was going to say, chronologically, that was the first time I got involved with Kairos at all, right?
Yep. Because I had asked you to add the oomps oomps to the end of the poem, because I didn't know what to put behind Barb's poem. I didn't know what I was going to do with the beat, because I only had like a really short version of the beat. I had to stretch it out. And, you know, I was like, well, maybe I'll filter it. I'll give it the 40 filter. I'll do something. And then I think you and I just finished the Clock Radio Speakers episode.
Yeah.
I was just like, just give it to Doc, see what he'll do with it. And I gave it to him. You knocked it out the park in like 10 minutes. I left. I was like, he'll take care of it tomorrow. And you were like, hey, check Dropbox.
Yo, Dropbox, they really should be like a platinum level sponsor of Kairos.
Absolutely.
Couldn't have done it without him.
Absolutely. You know what? The funny thing about that, I remember one day, I opened up the Dropbox app. I was about to upload something in there, and it was like, your space is critical. Like, what happened?
Let's not talk about the space, man.
That Kairos folder is out of control.
It is. I remember Armand when he bought that Galaxy.
Yeah, he thought everybody had that much space. I'm like, nah, man, nah.
He throwing random stuff in pictures. He was throwing random stuff in there. I was like, dude,
I got movies in my joint.
Get it out of here, please.
My bad. Yeah, when you buy a Galaxy S3, you get 50 gigs from Dropbox. And I think Dropbox, when you sign up for it, it gives you like 2 gigs or something like that.
Yeah, that's a big.
$2.50, completely different, man.
I just got 6.25 for. Like the automatic picture upload, I had to delete a bunch of pictures. I was like, I'm not losing Kairos, so let me delete a bunch of these pictures. These kids will be here tomorrow.
Upload the pictures and delete the pics. Yep.
I can't imagine not having 50. And even now, up until this point, like I have 91% of my 54 gigs filled.
That's crazy.
Like let me let me do this. I'm plugging Google right quick. All right, so I bought a Samsung Chromebook. And they gave me 100 gigabytes. Now, they say it's for 2 years, so we'll see what happens in 2015.
But you just did what?
I bought a Samsung Chromebook, and they gave me 100 gigabytes for 2 years in Google Drive.
Did you get the Chromebook Pixel?
Not the Pixel. No, I'm not. I got 4 kids. I can't get a Pixel.
No, I didn't realize they were giving. I didn't realize they were giving that space even just for a regular one.
Yeah, just for the regular two. It was 250. And
okay.
Yeah, man.
Man, I gotta buy something, step my game up. This is crazy.
Yeah, man. How much is 50 gigs like just straight from Dropbox?
They don't sell 50, they sell 100, and it's $10 a month.
Yeah.
Man. I know, that's it's tough. That's tough.
You wanted the special ones, man.
I can't, man, 2014, next summer.
I'll shut you down.
Just go away one day. Oh, I'm going to cry.
It's going to be a hot summer, I think, is the thing.
What are you going to do with all that stuff in there, though?
I got to get rid of a lot of this stuff now, because a lot of it is like old stuff. It's like I got movies in there. I got like songs. I got albums that, you know, my phone. I mean, I've got 32 gigs on my phone and a 16 gig SD card. All that stuff is filled. So I just gotta like, it's the summertime, so I just need to go ahead and do some summer cleaning, some late spring cleaning.
Day cleaning out folders, man.
Yep. It's the worst.
All right. So after Frostbit, we got Father's Day.
Father's Day. Really to me. I feel like when it comes to like our culture, I don't think that we reverence our fathers enough. You know, it's almost like, you know, a father or provides for his family and takes care of his responsibilities is like an anomaly. And, you know, like that should be, you know, oh my God, you know, like that's a big thing when that should just be second nature. And we just don't reverence and we don't give fathers what they deserve. I actually had this concept for Dreaming Out Loud. I've been sitting on this concept for 3 years. And, you know, now is the time to pull the trigger on it. Because from that point until now, the relationship with my father and then my relationship with my kids as a father has changed. So, you know, the concept was just me comparing how, you know, I look at my father as a child to how my kids look at me. And, you know, just kind of, you know, your father's your first superhero. Everybody has a really interesting relationship with their father. Even if you don't have a relationship with your dad, you have it. That in itself is a relationship with him because you feel some type of way about him. So I kind of wanted to capture that and I wanted to convict some people. And I wanted to, there's a lot of different goals and motives that I had with that album or with that song. You know, Boonie Mayfield produced it. Shout out to Boonie. I've known Boonie forever when he used to rap, and me and him, we were in rival rap crews and we was like dissing each other, and we would go to battles and we'd like be snarling and ice grilling each other and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, we squashed it. We did a record together and, you know, I got some work from him. So, you know, shout out to Boonie. And then shout out to Danielle on the hook. She destroyed that hook. Like,
killed it.
Killed it.
Smart, how long did it take her to record that? Like 20 minutes?
Like, yeah, 15, 20. Yeah.
But
she was like, what do you want? You want the soulful or you want the, what did she say? The R&B-ish. I'm like, you got options? That's crazy.
Yeah, because most of the time when you ask somebody to do a record for you or to, you know, help, you just kind of get whatever they give you.
Right.
But she was like, yeah, you know.
Very dope. Soul,
how do you want it?
Very dope session. That was a very dope session, though.
Yeah, it was. How do you guys feel about the song?
Love the song. It's one that's emotional in a way for me. So it is. What's the best way to put it? It's not. It's difficult in a way to listen to because I lost my pops, but at the same time, it's one that I appreciate. You know, it's hard to. I guess hard to say, but yeah, it's from every aspect. I love the song. I think it's going to challenge and touch a lot of people, as with every song. I mean, it's a very much a circular album, very, you know, in a positive sense, it's dense. And so, you know, this is just one area that is not necessarily covered. So yeah, it's real good.
I got a messed up relationship with my dad. So this is hard. Like, I mean, my dad's in prison. I mean, a lot of messed up nonsense. So I don't have that sort of positive relationship. If anything, my father-in-law is probably the closest thing to a father I have. So, but I like this song a lot. I think it's an obvious choice for people to be like, yeah, that's my favorite.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I remember you sending me the rough.
Yep.
And I was at work. I didn't have like a great relationship like growing up with my dad. We kind of like build on it, mm-hmm. as we was getting older, as we're getting older. And I remember listening to it. That made me want to call him just to say what's up. Like it was pretty dope. Kind of you know, kind of make you think back on the things that he did that he didn't have to do, you know, while I was growing up and stuff like that. So like, he could have packed up and left, but he, you know, chose to stay.
Jaquil?
I mean, well, I actually have two very distinct relationships with my, one with my biological father and one with my stepfather. The one with my biological father wasn't the greatest. Like, you know, definitely we, it wasn't good terms, but it's like even now, like I remember like talking to you, Armand, about this one time. Like I feel like if he had been there, my life would have been different or better, or he just would have saved me from some things. So, you know, even that relationship wasn't good. The relationship with my stepdad, like, it was a growing relationship. Like, you know, we grew into, you know, I genuinely looked at him, you know, they both passed away, but I looked at him as, you know, my father figure. But I think for Father's Day for me, like, honestly, I look at it as God. You know what I'm saying? Like, I couldn't look at it in a natural sense. Because, you know, like, parents, fathers, you know, the best father that I had was God, you know, and that's no disrespect to my biological father, and it's no disrespect to my stepfather, but the best father that I have is God. So, like, I kind of just viewed it in that way. I didn't even really look at it in the natural, you know, even like the trials and the things, like, I just look at it as, like, more so, you know how you said that he still, like, even if he was still tired, you know, he did. But, like, that's how I look at God, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just my view of it. Cause, and I, you know, I wonder about that song on the track, because I think the feedback for Father's Day is going to be interesting based on the fact that most people do not have a good relationship with their father. And yeah. I think when you don't have a good relationship with your father, it makes for an even harder relationship with God. So I think it'll be awesome to sort of hear the feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. And then with that being said, you know, like, I felt like I had to get my dad on it.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, you should tell people, like, because people are going to be like, is that really his dad?
I installed the app on his phone because he was like, I literally drove to Detroit one weekend to hang out with him, and we just kind of put it off. We kept putting it off. And, you know, I was like, all right, Dad, well, look, I'm going to set this app up on your phone. Whenever you're ready, just send it to me. And, you know, it took him like 2 months, 2 or 3 months. And he finally sent it to me. And I just broke down and I cried like a kid. But it was like tears of joy, because it was like, you know, all your life you want the affirmation from your dad. And I really didn't get it growing up. Like, me and my dad, he was there, but my dad wasn't there just because, you know, he was in the Army and he was really working 12, 18 hour shifts. So he would only have time to come home, eat, and take a nap. It was like the episode of Simpsons where he's working the two jobs, and, like, as soon as he laid down, his alarm went off and he got right back up. So there was a lot that I didn't get from him. But as I got older, he finally recognized me. When that paradigm shift where your father starts becoming more of like a friend. And I really started getting the affirmation, respect from him that I had always wanted. So to hear him say, you know, he sees me with my kids, and, you know, he's proud, and he feels like he still did okay because, you know, I'm taking care of my kids, and, you know, and it made me want to be a better father. I called my kids after the song was finished and just loved on them. You know, that's one of those songs that it moves you. It's going to move everybody in some different direction, obviously, judging by this conversation. But I'm glad, because these conversations need to happen. Because a lot of us need healing and restoration, and we need, you know, forgiveness to kind of rest on all of our relationships with a lot of our relationships with our parents. So,
yeah. Yeah.
All right. What's next?
I believe it's P90X.
Man.
Favorite song on the album. And that's.
Bam. You work out to this song, right, Kim?
Yes, I do.
That's what's up.
Surprise.
P90X is like, it's ill. Like, I told him, like, you know, I don't know about, like, the Christian Hip Hop Awards type of things, but, like, this should be a nod for, like, best collaboration of 2013. Like, it was just, this song goes hard, seriously. Like, I think, like, honestly, after Father's Day, like, it seems like Father's Day is the break. It's like, that's the break in the album, because I literally heard it two ways. Like, P90X starts off like a whole nother set for Kairos. Yeah, and, like, that's like the way that Kairos, like, I was telling A, like, I'm like, I heard Kairos, like the way that it was symphonically put together, you can hear the Kairos, you know what I'm saying? And I was like, but P90X, ooh, that's my song right there. Like, it sound like my jam.
This features seven rappers, a sample, 6 minutes long, there's no hook, and girls like it.
Yeah. So my wife's, is this my wife's favorite record on the album? I think it is.
That's crazy.
I'll say this, man. Like, if there is any way to get all y'all in the same, well, not even, it didn't even have to be the same building. Like, if there's a way to make some kind of video happen for this, man.
Yo,
we should tell the idea I have for the video. Remember?
No, okay. I don't want to give that away because we might use it.
Oh, okay.
I think
I've told all three of y'all about it. All
right. Well, then.
And if not, I'll tell y'all offline. But yeah, we might use that. So I've been hush hush about some of the visuals that we're gonna do for the album. But yeah.
Yeah, I definitely don't think I've ever seen it done that way. So that'd be
Did I come up with a title for this one? When we were talking, like, I was driving through and I was like, that sounds like.
Yeah, you were, because originally the song was going to be called Limitless, because I had always wanted to work. I wanted, like, and Kellis to know, Kellis and I, all right, let me give a real quick tip for Christian artists, and then I'm going to talk about how the song came together. Like, it's a backstory, and I'm going to lead it up. Kellis and I met because I had kind of put out the idea of, you know, how come more Christian artists don't work together? If we're one body, why don't we see more unity in the body? So I hooked up with Kellis, and I hooked up with another guy named Damon Duggar. Shout out to Dame. And they both kind of grasped onto that idea, and they both gave me connections with some of the people who had shared my same sentiment. So, you know, through Kellis, I met Lavoisier, which in turn opened a whole different door to a lot of different people, because he's an OG in the game. And so I knew that when I did an album, I wanted to do something really gaudy. So I was like, yo, let's do a posse cut. Posse cuts, and if you listen to Clack Radio Speakers, Doc and I always talk about, okay, where are the posse cuts? You know, the posse cuts have the same six rappers on it. You know, Ross, Wayne, Jeezy, like, it's the same people. And I'm like, let's get a really eclectic group of people. Let's give them a rappity rap beat and just rap. Let's just enjoy our craft. And this was around the time I was really in love with Limitless, just the concept of it. First half, not when the drugs started, side effects, but just the beginning where he was just getting stuff done because he was so focused. And right. I wanted to do a song called Limitless. And I don't remember how did it end up becoming P90X.
I was talking, like, I remember when we were talking, because I was driving up to Coventry in Cleveland, and you had sent me the song to listen to it, and it was like, it just kept going, like, it just, like, it had no rest, like there was literally no rest, and I'm like, yo, this is hard, I'm like, this is like that workout thing, like P90X, and you was like, oh, that's interesting, and I was like, yeah. I was like, this goes hard. I like it. Like, yeah, I think that's how we, like, that's, it's just like when you hear music, it sparks something in you, you know, like it something in you recognizes it and P90X, like, it just, like, it literally doesn't have a break. But there is, if there's anybody who's listening who has ever taught dance or who has ever, like, worked out super hard, like, there's a place that you get to where you don't get any rest, and instead of getting tired, you get more amped up, and you get, like, you, it's like your body doubles and triples in endorphins, and, like, you're ready to release and do some things, and, like, P90X is totally that, and it's like it really is the game changer for the album. Like, it totally switched it, like, it just placed perfectly. That's my favorite song, you know, other than Amy Winehouse, because, you know, I love Amy Winehouse, but P90X, that's my, like, and it's saying a lot, because I have a limited space iPod. if you get on my iPod, you are something else. And not only are you on my iPod, but you're on my workout set. P90X is that song. Seriously.
Yeah.
Made the cut, Armand. That's what's up.
And one thing I was telling Armand is that obviously you have the ebb and flow, the highs and lows in this first half of the album. And it's almost like you have people, it's almost like like cats come in and embrace Armand, and it's almost like a community type thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's one thing about the song that I love.
And my last point before I give it to Doc, because I know Doc is dying to talk about this beat. Shout out to Jay Givens, because this was a record that was supposed to be it was supposed to be a mixtape. So I originally had it over a Mos Def track, over one of the joints that he did off the Ecstatic that Madlib produced. And if you work with Jay Givens works quick. So if you ask him to do something, you don't have to work. You don't have to wait 6 months. You might wait 2 weeks. You might wait 2 weeks. And the way he flowed on the original version of that beat,
man,
scared the bejesus. Not just me, but every other person on that record. Like, I remember sending it out. Like, cause I was like, all right, so let's make it like a friendly competition. Let me send everybody's reference verses out just to hear where everybody's at. And Smurf was like, you better not. Just because Jay
destroyed
it's really, really dope on Doc's record, but if you hear the original version, and you know, maybe I'll play it on the live Q&A that we have or something, but it's unreal. It's
catastrophic.
Wait, is that the one, like, I think I was going to New York and you I don't want to redo.
And you were like, I said what?
No, like, I was like, well, can you listen? Like, you schooled me to the rules of when you send out, when you have other people on your, you can't redo your verse. Like, that's when you schooled me on not being able to. I was like, you can't do, he was like, no, you can't do that. You can't redo your verse after you hear other people's verses.
That's the 4-3-2-1 rule. That's the LL and Cannabis rule.
Oh, okay.
I told Armand to ignore that rule. I was like, nah, go ahead, man. It's your record.
I had some of a verse written, and I was like, no. But the verse I came up with was just a freestyle verse. It was just something I just wanted to write. And I was like, no, let me put this on the song. Let me just go ahead and just put on the song. That's why I love P90X, just because the concept of it is just, it's like Kiel said, it's like a workout. It's just everybody switches up and does a different workout. Like Yavis is like Pilates, and Lavoisier is like push-ups. And, you know, each person adds their own different workout. And then when you add the beat, what Doc did. See, I just threw you
that. So if I remember correctly, I think, Armand, you requested, you're like, yeah, I need a beat with a lot of beat change. Didn't you ask me, like, could you do something with a different beat for each rapper?
Yes.
And I'm,
you
like,
said, how many rap? Six.
So what I did is, so we're not going to name what the sample is. I mean, hip hop fans will be able to pick up on that pretty quick, but I'm lucky because I happen to have the original, like, tracked out version of this song. I have the studio files of this sample.
How did you manage?
I was in a pretty large beat battle back in 2007 in New York, put on by a dynamic producer, which I used to be a part of. The idea was they were going to give the fully, like, it's called tracked out, because all the different, like, all the elements of the song are isolated. So the drums and the strings, pianos, vocals, everything, all in their own separate files. And they gave it, the original idea was they were going to give it to 10 up and coming producers. Trying to think who was on that list. Dudes like Jim Bond, who produced for Ghost, and Jim Jones.
Was Jim Bond the one who did? Never mind. I'm thinking of Jim Jones, because I was thinking, who did Trick Daddy Let's Go?
Nah, Jim Bond did like Bright Lights Big City. He did like Fire for Ghostface. They had Frequency, who did some records for Snoop. We had some people. So it was supposed to be 10 up and coming producers. And then 10, like, established, like, industry producers. So it was going to be... And so, because we had, what, Just Blaze and Rockwilder judging us, and there was some other people around. And so going into this, I was thinking, going into that beat battle, I was like, man, I got to make something that can stand up to that. So the first beat I made with that is a beat I've been trying to get someone to rhyme on for, like, 6 years at this point.
And it's retarded. That beat is crazy.
It's too much, though. It's just, there's too much going on.
It's way too much.
It's the perfect beat battle beat. So when Armand wanted something, I had been looking for a good reason to reflip that sample. So what I did is I came up with the beat, and all the different parts, originally they were just laid out, and I sent it to him, and I was like, yeah, here's like a bunch of different ideas. Like, tell me which ones you like. Like, I thought it would be sort of iterative. Like, he'd be like, ah, I like this one, or I don't like this one, or da-da-da. And instead, he's like, yep, that's it. That was it. He just wanted them in exactly that same order, which is how he sent it out to
all. Yeah, because we were going to track them out. We were just going to do, like, you sent me, like, an 8-bar, either a 4-bar or 8-bar version of each point, right?
Yeah, something like that. And
we were just going to, like, split. We were just going to stretch them out into 16s for each rapper. But
instead, I'm trying to think. I forget at what point we decided, you know, we wanted to sort of, like, just keep bringing stuff back and to sort of keep it interesting. So that's how you sort of ended up with. There's at least 7 different flips.
Yeah, I mean, there's 7 rappers. There's 7 rappers if you include me on the song. And then Flex, it was originally 6, and then Flex was the last minute addition. So that made 7. So, and then even with that, you had the last minute flip for Dre Murray.
Yeah, because his verse was longer than I thought, so I put an extra flip in the middle of his verse.
There's an inside joke about Dre Murray and counting bars and stuff. So yeah, he's got 24 while everybody else has 16.
But I'm proud of this record. Like, I'm excited to hear what people have to say about this record.
Yeah.
But mixing this record, oh my goodness! Talk about lessons learned.
Can we not talk about the mix?
The mix took forever, but we got it. Eventually, took, you know, probably 6 months.
Yeah, literally.
The problem is Armand and I got better as time went on. So every time we figured something else out, we had to go back and fix all the old mistakes we made. So honestly, next time, I think it would have been simpler if I would have, like, no joke, bought a microphone and shipped it to every MC, had them record on the same microphone. I would have saved myself, like, weeks. But I'm proud of this record. I'm proud of what everybody did. And I'm sort of proud of Armand for being, I mean, he'll, like, Armand, you'll be the first to tell people, you don't think you have the best verse on this.
No, no.
And you have no problem with that.
No problem with that. I think that it's always weird. I always kind of question, I tweeted about this earlier because I posted the Mr. Servo and a Big Pun song. Like, if the differences in your lyricism are that different, you're Silk the Shocker and you get Jay-Z on your record, what are you doing? Like, Is it just I really like this artist and I just want to have him on my album to say that I want to have him on my album? Or is it, you know, at the end of the day, still being an MC is competitive and can't have the best verse. If you can't be LeBron on the court, you got to at least contribute. You got to at least be Norris Cole. You got to at least be Birdman so that when they show the highlights and they talk about who did what, it's not all just you, that you're on that highlight list. So, you know, I knew that lyrically, you know, from a lyrical perspective, I don't think that one MC is better than the other in this case. But I definitely, definitely don't have the best verse on this album on this song by far. I think I have the worst. And I'm fine with that. I think a lot of my collaborations on this album, people, Cam killed me on Marathon. Smurf and Priest killed me on Barbershop Window. I'm cool with that. I'm so okay with that because to me, having the best verse, especially with a record like that, is not what was important to me. The message of this song was unity. So as long as all of us came together and you got a sense of unity from this song, who cares who had the best verse? That's not what it's about to me. You can have that debate, but if there's more to that than just that. So,
yeah. All right.
So what's next? Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, I like how you don't even. How do you not know these tracks, man?
Yo, leave me alone, son.
It's all right. Yeah, Dusty Rhodes, with your man Raging Moses.
Raging Moses. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This story is funny. Me and Smurf have a really funny story about this beat. It got to the point where on the album I was getting kind of stagnant. I couldn't find any production. I wanted to kind of reach out and connect with some people that I hadn't worked with. And Wes Pendleton was one of the guys, like, immediately when I asked on Twitter, you know, shout out to Twitter. I mean, Twitter is powerful, powerful.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I mean, all these relationships are forged from Twitter and from social media, period. You know, immediately when I said, hey, who should I work with? The first response I got the first time I said that, because I did it twice, was Wes P, Wes Pendleton. And I hit Wes up. And it's weird. Like, you never, again, this is another theme of you never know who's watching you, because I had no idea that Wes knew who I was and wanted to work with me. I had no clue. So don't judge, you know, artists, don't judge your, you know, all you see is hits. Like, all right, you look at your Bandcamp, you say, all right, 10 people downloaded my tape. It's not successful. It's not a success. You don't know who those 10 people are. You have no idea. And those 10 people could kill the one and be more beneficial to you and your career than those 100,000 people that you see on that Piff and all those other sites. So, you know, Wes sent me the beat and I was like, sigh. I'm a beat nerd. I'm a hoarder. I'm a beat snob. That's the word I'm looking for. I'm a snob. And he was like, so do you want it? Because I got somebody else who wants to buy it. And I was like, nah, you good. Go ahead and sell it. So what happened, Smurf?
What did happen?
He put it on his SoundCloud, and
that's right.
And you was like, "Yo, I'm about to cop this beat off Wes." And
oh,
I was
you breaking up.
Like, well, what beat is it? I said, "You was like, I'm about to cop this beat off Wes." And that's, I said, right. "Oh, word, which one is it?"
That's right.
And you told me the name of it.
Because didn't you already start writing to it? I think you started writing to it though.
No, I didn't touch. After I decided. Okay. That I didn't want it. So he put it on sound. I mean, I talked to him that night. The next morning it was on SoundCloud. Like, I'm trying to sell it.
Yeah. I was trying to get it from him.
And I don't know what it was that made me say, let me get that back.
I thought you already had something to it though. I thought that was another.
That might have been another beat that me and Smurf fight over beats all the time.
This dude be hoarding. He got treasure in his computer. So
that 50 gig Dropbox, man. There's
I believe it, and I'm gonna tap into it one day.
No, we working on your project now, so you do need to come over and hit some of these beats.
No doubt.
So no doubt. Coming soon. So yeah, so Smurf was like, yo, I'm about to cop this beat from Wes. What you think about it? And I was like, dog, this is the beat that he just tried to sell me. And I was like, he was like, you sure? And that's what it was. You kept irking me about it. He was like, you sure you don't want to rap to it? And I was like, do I want to rap to it?
That's right, like, you're right.
I was like, the beat is dope.
Picked up 2K. That's what it was.
Maybe I'm just being, what happened? What'd you say?
I said we went and picked up 2K.
Yeah, that was the night that we played. That we went and played 2K. Yeah, and we got 2K. Yeah, yep.
Yeah. Okay, I remember now.
Yep. You know, Smurf was like, "All right, you know, I think you'd sound guy." Kind of hyped me up. I was like, "All right, I trust you. This is one of the reasons why you need a team, because your team can hear things and see things that you may not be able to." So I had it. I sat on it, and I didn't know what kind of concept to go with it. And then, you know, over the summer, my sister actually preached on, you know, the idea, you know, we have this idea and people say, oh, well, America is a Christian nation. This is a Christian nation. No, it's not. Because if you look at its history, it's full of manipulation. It's full of lies. It's full of this.
Yep.
It's full of that. And I'm like, that's not Christ-like. So what I wanted to do was really just kind of poise. And I didn't want to do the whole, this is what I didn't want to do. I didn't want to say, we listening to these rappers and they're in the Illuminati. I didn't want to do that.
Right.
That's easy. I wanted to look in the mirror and say, what are we as a people doing wrong? What are the perceptions and the ideologies that we have that are wrong that we need to address? So if you notice it, I'm really talking about ourselves. I didn't talk about celebrities are bad. I talked about our perception of celebrities. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I remember when the hook, I remember I had an early version of the hook, you know, where it says that the American dream is a nightmare. And I sent it to Kellis. And Kellis was like, are you sure?
I remember first hearing that. I was like, ooh, that's a bullseye. That's a target. Like, you're making yourself a target with that. But yeah. In a good way. Definitely in a good
Yeah,
way.
Definitely. So, and then, yeah, then I ended up getting Rage and Moses. We had a really good response from Hell on Earth. And, you know, this song is kind of like a continuation of it. So, you know, I want to, again, give him an opportunity, you know, to launch off of the platform that I've been given. So that's pretty much it.
And so for people who aren't wrestling fans, explain the title Dusty Rhodes.
Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream. That's all it means. The American Dream. Dusty Rhodes' nickname is the American Dream. So instead of just calling it the American Dream, I called it. I have several wrestling references on this album, and if you can find them all, I'll give you a prize or something. I wanted.
Can you be a wrestling fan and get those, or it has to be non-wrestling people who get that?
You can be a wrestling fan, and if you're not going to catch all the references. I'm challenging you right now. Find them all.
Okay.
So Walking Contradictions was actually that was, as Doc was talking about earlier, that was 574. That was something that he and I did on a whim on a Saturday in like 3 hours.
So you sent me the sample.
I did. I had.
And you sent me the tempo, which is great. I just had to make it work.
Because I had wrote to a song. I got a beat off of Hipstrumentals. I got a beat offline that had the same sample, and I was like, "This is." And I wrote to it, and I was like, "Nah, this is too good for a freestyle." But I wanted to capture the spirit that the sample brought. So, you know, I found the sample, shot at the Doc, and you know, Doc did something about like 45 minutes, an hour.
This was real quick. I think first it was, you know, we knocked out like the main part. And then I added in sort of that transition where I slow the beat down and slow the tempo down. And then I think on the final revision, I added this the little flip on the first half of verse 2. I think that's how it went. And this was originally, man, I can't remember. Was it, wasn't Ketchup, was it? No, what was, what am I thinking of? What was the little collection you did of all like the upcoming
Condiments.
EPs? Condiments, thank you.
Yeah, so, we were going to do this instead of Q&A.
This almost made Condiments instead of Q&A. That's right. That's how old this is.
Yeah.
But we held
this
on.
This is summer of 2011.
Yeah, yeah.
This song's almost 2 years old.
Timeless music, man.
Yeah, it's funny, like, hearing all the beats I did on this, it's, like, all, like, different, like, eras of, like, the beats that I made. Like, this is, like, classic. I have such a thing. My little, you know, and that, you know, all that stuff. That's bringing my whole catalog back. But this second verse is the best verse on the album. Favorite Armand verse ever. And I'm going to keep saying that over and over and over again. Love that second verse. It's cool. Man, listen.
I'm not in that place anymore. That's the thing about those venting verses.
Yeah.
You know, it just takes me back to that place, and I'm like, I'm not there anymore, but somebody else is. So, but yeah, that was rough. That was rough. Dude.
I think that's going to be. This is definitely one of those transparent records that people are going to appreciate off the album. I don't think there's any question. The beat is something serious, man. Like, wow. Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, look, man. I, let me say this, like. I keep seeing a lot of people say, man, I don't see enough honesty in Christian rap, blah, 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 blah. Like, to me, it's like, man, people don't be looking, man. Like,
they don't.
Yeah, to be honest, to be absolutely honest with you, the reason a lot of the most popular cats are popular is because, I've used this term before with you, Armand, a lot of those dudes do the pseudo-transparency, I think I said. To where they talk about struggles indirectly.
But they don't include themselves, yeah.
Right, so it's like, yeah, I dealt with this, and it's a real broad statement. So, you know, not that, I mean, it's a thin line between a testimony and glorying in what you went through, and it's a very tight rope to walk, yeah. But at the same time, you know, a testimony is not, yeah, man, you know, I struggle with looking at magazines. Like, you know, sometimes, like, what magazines? Sometimes you got to be a little specific. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't sit there and say, man, you know, I mean, there's just certain limits and boundaries, yeah, but There's more cats. All that to say, a lot of cats are doing better at being more truly helpful in what they're being transparent about, rather than just leaving someone with unrealistic expectations. You know, oh yeah, they made themselves seem a little more human, but not necessarily as much as they could have. I don't know.
Yeah.
And this song really does show a human side.
And a level of transparency going through it. You know, you reference Bizzle's joint where he just talked about struggling with pornography. Yeah. At the end of that song, he didn't say, "Glory to God, I got through it." He's like, "Yo, I'm still here."
Right.
All right, let's go to Inside. Featuring Defy Life, produced by Natty T. Shout out to Natty Smurf. Talk to the people about your man Natty.
It's my little brother. I actually met him. I'm from San Diego, so I moved to Ohio like 2003, and I literally met Natty the day before I got married. And from there, just built a relationship. Built a relationship. Just we used to make beats. It was like me, Natty, another cat named James, another cat named Daquan. We used to all make beats, and we would meet up once a week and just play beats for each other. And that's how like the relationship built. So just started making music, met Armand, and then just introduced them to, and you know, rest is history. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, that original version of this Inside still jams something serious.
So mad I couldn't use that beat, yo. I can't even play it. Because it hurt.
Yeah, that was dope,
it
too.
It hurts my soul. But I think Natty's version is just as dope, if not better.
Hey, your original Kairos is closely as dope as this one. You have like two versions.
That's a very interesting idea. That's like neck to neck.
So
yeah, that's true.
You might just A&R or something, bro.
I'll put my name in the back. Back of the CD.
Yeah, but I don't really have any stories for this one. I mean, this is just, you know.
I remember you sent. It is what it is. Remember we Jafar Life sent you the. This is funny. Like when Jafar Life sent you the verse,
yeah,
and you played it for everybody. I didn't even know he sung, so I was like, "Who is that? Like, who in the world is, you know, serenading on the song?" So it was crazy.
Yeah, Jafar Life, a low key R&B artist, man.
Yeah, man, I never knew that, man. And it was crazy because
what you call him, Kellis?
That's low key R&B artist. That's
nah. What you call him? You call him LL Cool Life, right? Or LL Cool J5? LL Cool.
Yeah. That was you, man.
Oh, was that me? My bad.
Nah, I'm not taking that credit, man. I told him. I said, man, you need to record an album just singing. But West Side Pharmacy, he added a lot more singing to any of his other albums. So yeah, but he wrecked it. He did his thing, man.
Dope, very dope.
Finish your points, Smurf, because I interrupted you.
Nah, it's cool. But
he's like, yeah, you did, but it's all good.
Yeah, you know, he always do it. It's all good. But I just remember when he first sent it, I was just bugging because just never knew that he could sing. But like to me personally, that's probably my favorite verse from Jafar Life.
Yeah.
I'm gonna lay it on the line, you know.
He's fast. He definitely did his thing.
And that's, I mean, to me, and that's, this is a small point, that says a lot about what Jafar thinks of you, Armand. I remember, man, I think he asked a question on Twitter, like, who should I be working with? And I said, man, you need to work with Armand. And then you guys connected from, I mean, there's a funny story behind it, but.
We're not going to tell that story. Okay.
What happened, Kellis?
That's forever in the vaults.
I'm not going to put him on blast.
Never.
It's a little embarrassing.
Yeah, but anyway, okay. They built, and I mean, everything that's, man, it's just been orchestrated really greatly by how, you know, by the Lord. So, yeah, man. Yeah.
All right. So, my favorite song on the album, Barbershop Window.
Oh, yes.
Really?
My favorite song by far. I love this song. I'm obsessed with this song. If my phone had an iTunes play count, this would far exceed any other song on the album. I love this song. I love it. Shout out the Priest, shout out the Smurf. You know, it was originally supposed to be over another beat, ended up finding this beat. And you know, the concept of this is another wrestling reference. So I'm giving this other one away.
Writes down
the wrestling reference for go ahead and write this down. The wrestling reference with this is with the Rockers, Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty. They were a tag team in the late 80s, early 90s. And there's a turning point when they break up. Where Shawn Michaels turns into a bad guy and he super kicks Marty Jannetty in the face and then throws his face through a barbershop window. And from there, Shawn Michaels goes on to be one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. And Marty Jannetty is, you know, he wrestled a little while after that. You know, he had drug problems. He never ascended to the level of Shawn. And that's what this song is. This is the turning point of the album. So this is, you know, I could either be Shawn Michaels and I could ascend and I can make the decision that ascends me to, you know, the other side of the Cairo circle, which, you know, you'll get in the steps on the album, or I could become Marty Jannetty and I could not live up to my potential and make decisions, personal choices that would have me nowhere near, you know, have me a coulda, woulda, shoulda. And then, of course, you know, the barbershop, it's, is a staple in I mean, I've never been to a white barbershop, Doc, so I don't know how y'all do, but in a black, where do you get your haircut? You I cut it?
Look, white, let me tell you something about barbershops. So I used to get my hair cut in a barbershop, and it's almost always like, so first, like when I was growing up, because my dad was in the Air Force, so I go to like to the like the place in like the, you know, they have like the little like BX mall.
Yep.
So I go to the little place there. Okay. But once I got out of the house, I only went to one other barber because I've been at UConn pretty much ever since. So, you know, it was this lady cut my hair. You know, it was she was a barber, like she wasn't a hairstylist. We get a lot of that up here, a lot of hairstylists. Right, whereas, you know, they cut hair either way. I'm like, nah, look, my hair is like, you know, a quarter of a millimeter, so I don't need a hairstylist, I need a barber, right. But you know, unless I want to go drive into a major city, or at least a city for by Connecticut standards, meaning, you know, basically Hartford or like New Haven or anything like that, then you're not going to find what you might consider like the a traditional sort of barbershop. Like in the suburbs, they don't really have, like, you know, it's boring. Like, you know, she, you know, got the vacuum clean up afterwards. It's not, I mean, you could go to Supercuts, but I never did that. I mean, now for me to do anything than cut hair myself would be stupid, right? It takes like 10 minutes. It's like nothing. Like, but now white barbershops, there's absolutely nothing noteworthy about that. It is the most mundane $15 to $20 you will spend.
So that's the black barbershop is like the complete opposite of that.
Okay.
It's where men go to unwind. It's where
white people got that, but you know, it's not.
You know, your barber is he's your confidant. He's your life coach. You talk sports with him. You talk about your relationship. You talk about music. You talk about whatever. And that's how this song kind of formed, because, you know, Smurf and I would go to Priest's house, to his mother. This house and record there in his brother's studio, and you know, we wouldn't even record. You know, we went to the studio maybe two or three times and didn't write a bar. We just talked.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what birthed the camaraderie. We finally, like, after the second or third conversation, we were like, all right, like, let's put this camaraderie on a record, because we were really talking about some things, like some really important things. So, so yeah, Smurf, you got anything to add to the story or anything?
Well, no, I just wanna. I was going through. I know when I wrote that verse, like I was going through a lot in life, period. You know, home, work, everything. So it really like put things in perspective for me, as like the Lord was writing through me, and then kind of, you know, you record it, and then I know I was telling him, we was talking about this before, music should witness to you. If it has the impact in your life, it'll have the impact in others' lives as well. Impact, yeah. it's going to come from your experiences or what you're doing at what you're going through at that current time. So it definitely that whole song is witnesses to me. It's very dope. Very dope.
All right. Next
up is Change My Mind.
Change My Mind. I mean, I think we kind of talked about, you know, why, you know, this was a record that Doc and I were kind of on the fence about keeping on the album, but this is so important to the message of the album. And plus, I love this song.
I love this song, man. Yeah, I love it. This song is, man. Yeah.
This song is dope.
Shout out to the sample, dope, man.
It's an unconventional sample.
Yeah, because this was supposed to be like a freestyle. What I was going to do was I was going to do like one of those I'm back records, like in true rapper fashion. So I was like, yo, Doc, rapping rappity rappish. And he made me that. And I was like, whoa, what is this?
You know what? I can see a music video. Armand dressed up like Jimi Hendrix. Done deal.
Go ahead and stop you right
there.
Done deal.
I'm writing that down.
Let's get the ball rolling on that.
I'm writing that down right now.
Chill out, Smurf. Done deal.
Get that guitar. Get the riffing, man.
I'm feeling. You know what? I'm feeling that.
So, yeah, but yeah, I don't have any other. You want to talk
about it no more?
I don't.
No, I mean, I mean, if just to give people more like more nerdy insight, you know. So originally, the sample flip on the second half of the song that came much later,
way later.
For a while, the second half of the song sounded just like the first half. The little thing at the outro that was a last minute addition. Trying to think of anything else to sort of like, you know, just to make people feel like they're, you know all the details. Nah, I guess that's about it, right?
Nah. I mean, I just remember recording this song like 10 times.
Oh my goodness. The number of
mixes.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's all right. But yeah, I think we can move on. Lost It All. Lost It All was Lost It All was another one of those who should I work with? And right after I got the record with Wes, immediately people were like, work with Suede. So I go to Suede SoundCloud and Suede makes like melodic trap beats. And I was like, I'm not going to work with Suede. No, because I like those beats, but I don't like to rap to them. But I talked to Suede, and if you've talked to Suede, you know that that's a dope dude.
Yeah.
So he was like, whatever you want. He was like, you know, pay the bills. So he was like, I wanted to try something different. He was like, throw me something. So I threw him one of my favorite techno records by Deadmau5. And he flipped in like 20 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And the record was just incredible. So,
crazy.
You know, as far as Lost It All, I got the two people who I know can talk about losing and struggle the most, which was Bumps Inf and Jay Mitch. You know, I hadn't met Bumps until I actually asked him for the verse. I hate doing that. I'd rather have some sort of camaraderie first. But we were at the time I was trying to get the album out by Halloween. So I was like, he was like, yeah, he had just gotten married. He was like, this was like the week he was back from his honeymoon. So he was like, yeah, I'll get it real quick. So he sent me the verse in like a week and a half. And, you know, I was in Colorado earlier this year. And Jay Mitch is like my little brother. He is my little brother. You know, I definitely disciple that dude. I love that dude. And, you know, in the song where he talks about getting evicted on Christmas, he called me Christmas Eve like, yo, they're kicking us out the house tomorrow. So, you know, what better person to talk about loss than somebody that I've actually shared loss with, you know, and then to see his, you know, his victory over that, you know, that now he's in a great position, you know, great career, taking care of his family, all that good stuff. I just wanted him to share that. So I love the song. It's personal to me. And then Sway later on told me that he experienced loss. The night I sent him the mixed version, he told me that he experienced a personal loss in his family. And he was like, thank you for sending me the song when you did, because this ministered to me. I was like, yep, it's on the album.
Man. And my kids would not let me play it one time, just one only. Like, if I played it out, I had to play it at least three times. So that's just a little thing right there.
That's dope.
So you know, I'll go ahead and I want to add a little personal note to the very last of the six steps of Kairos. So Armand, we were looking for somebody to do the last step, which is the last interlude. Well, not the, it turns out the really last interlude gets added at the last minute after Boomerang, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But Armand was looking. Armand wanted something different for the last person to do the interlude.
I wanted, since there's six interludes, I wanted three girls, three guys, and I wanted three different types. So I got, you know, I got different ages, different races, you know, so, you know, I got, you know, my nephew did a skit, you know, two of my boys, that me and Smurf kick it with. They did the other two skits. Had my homegirl from work, she did a skit. Had Smurf's mom do the skit. She destroyed it.
Shout out to mom.
And
dudes.
You know, it was, shout out to mom. Yeah, mom, she killed it. And yeah, so we were like, I think you said it, Doc. You were like, you need a white girl on this album.
No. You said you wanted a white girl.
Oh, did I?
Yeah.
I say that? All right.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
And I was like, well, you know, my wife wants to be on the album. Because, I mean, she's, you know, she's my best friend, right? So she's hearing, my poor wife has heard every iteration of every mix that we've ever done. God bless that woman. But, you know, so she's never really recorded anything, obviously. But, you know, obviously I, you know, it was pretty easy. We, you know, set the mic up, did everything. And I think it was maybe two, maybe three takes. And I was like, yep, that's it. And then mixed it, mastered it on the spot. And then, and that was it. And Armand was like, yep. And I thought that was, Armand, you're going to tell a story about the very last interlude, right? When we get there?
Have to. All right. Have to. Yep. Have to.
All right. I just want to throw that into, to give my wife credit for being the unofficial member of Team Kairos.
Yeah, she definitely was on some like, I got to mix this record, and she was just like, all right. So that was cool. Shout out to your wife. So yeah, it makes no sense. We are down to the nitty gritty of the album. Makes no sense. Produced by Pizzy. This record was supposed to be on Insomnia. This record was supposed to be on Insomnia. There's a different version. It was actually on Condiments where I rap about different stuff. Like, I think I rapped about my mom, an ex and somebody else. Mm-hmm. And, I wanted to revisit it cause I didn't feel like I'd really hit it the right way. So,
Pizzy is a bad man though. That's a bad dude right there,
man. He has so much incredible. I mean, his album, if you go to pizzy.bandcamp.com and get his album RIP Blank, the production on that is insane. insane. I mean, he samples anything. He sampled a Britney Spears record, but it killed it, like destroyed it. So shout out to Pizzy. That's my little brother too. I don't really have any like stories for this. It's just one of those songs. Like, I think the story just kind of speaks for itself.
Yeah.
I think the choice of the sample, especially the hook, like, I think this will really stand out to people as well. Like, it sounds different, you know. When we've done the few Clock Radio Speakers episodes that we have done where we talk about Christian hip hop, I'm sort of on the record as saying that, you know, I think that if Christian hip hop, and this is me as an outsider, right? But if Christian hip hop is establish itself as more than just the sort of like forgotten about subgenre, that the way forward isn't to sound like everything else on the radio, only Christian, right? The answer is to make your own sound. And I was very cognizant of that as I was helping our mom put this together, right? Like, the choices like that I made for beats that I tried to help with, like, that this does not sound like what's on the radio, not in a man radio sucks kind of way, but no, this is our mod.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not trying to have it be, you know, if I have anything to say about it, which I have some limit to say, right? But it's like, I don't want it to be like Armand is like this artist you've heard, only Christian. Mm-hmm. No. Armand is Armand.
Yeah.
I felt like I needed to say that. All right.
No, that's real. That's real. I just want to follow up on that. Part of the issue with that is that you have a lot of artists and you have a lot of fans who want a recycled or edited version of another artist.
Yeah. I can't listen to Drake anymore, so I want somebody who sounds like him so I don't feel bad about listening to him.
Right. So you know, that gets to a whole other conversation. I'll just say this. A lot of the popular albums, they don't hit me the same way as a lot of the people. Like, the masses hunger for whatever they hunger for, and a lot of people only hunger for it because they think that it's popular. You know, they miss out on a lot of things because, like, man, I don't know, Doc, man. I mean, there are so many cats that are unique, that are in, that are like an Armand, like a Braille, like a Ishan, but cats are so caught up in, oh man, he flipped the Big Sean flow, or you know, that beat sounds just like so and so, but he saved. So it's a whole nother, that's a whole nother subject. All right, I'm stepping out. I'm back. I'm shutting up right now.
You about to go in. I could tell. Your Super Saiyan levels was reaching max.
I already got a lot of gray hair, so.
All right. The last track on the album.
Boomerang, yeah. Boomerang is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't really said it, but I probably crushed 60% of this album. And I actually found this beat on accident. I was just going through, I was off from work that day, and I was just going through my Dropbox. This is why I need to get rid of Dropbox, because I have stuff on there I don't even know that I have. And, you know, Pizzy had sent me a bunch of beats on Dropbox. And that's why I always say, go back and listen to stuff. Don't just say something is whack and just throw it away. Like, go back and listen to it, because you may be in a different headspace or whatever. And I went back and I listened, and I had this beat. I had it for a year. Dropbox said I had it for a year before I even heard it. So I heard it, and immediately I was at a really angry point in my life. I was just angry at God and angry at my life and circumstances. And I just had to vent. You know, I was just frustrated. And, you know, so when you hear me yelling and screaming on that record, like, it was like a Kanye Through the Wire thing, where, you know, the original, this song was recorded probably about 3 or 4 times. But, you know, the original version of Through the Wire, he's actually rapping through a wire. And then, you know, in later versions, as he re-records, he's just rapping with his teeth shut and stuff like that. So, you know, the original version of that is just really, you can hear me crying and you probably hear me like sniffing and stuff like that. And, you know, the later version I re-recorded, it had I just wanted to capture that point, you know, and the Lord allowed me to kind of revisit that place mentally and just kind of, you know, let it out on the record. So, but yeah, I absolutely adore it. I had to get it. Shout out to Raging Moses, because he had that beat. Like, I didn't do anything with it. So Pizzy gave it to Raging Moses, And I hit Raging Moses up, like, can I have that beat? And he was like, sure. You know, I don't know if I would have gave it up that easy. Pause. So, yeah.
So let me ask you, mind. So, I mean, Boomerang is a slower record. Were you afraid at all of ending the album on that note?
Nope. Because if you listen to all my other projects, if you listen to Dreaming Out Loud, this is only, I know a lot of people know me from different projects and mixtapes and stuff, but this is like my second album, you know? And if people, and even before then, even with Wake Up 2 and Wake Up 2.5 and Ventilation, all of my albums end somberly. They all end reflective. They start off slow, they reach a peak, and then they slowly come back down, and then they crash. So, you know, if you're familiar with, you know, the roller coaster that I take you on musically, nah, I don't want to end the album on a, I think ending the album, the fact that, I think me saying that I need you, that ends the album on a high note.
Yep.
Because that's what the album is all about. You know, so I say all this stuff and I say, you know what, even after all this, this is the last time that I'm saying this is the last time because I need you. Something always brings me back to you. And that's it. That ends the album.
Well, it doesn't quite end the album.
Well, for me.
No, because you got your kids.
Yeah. Yeah. I let people into my Kairos moment, which was, you know, having my kids together for the first time in a few years. And shout out to Rich. Rich is the other person. He's the godfather of my son. And he actually had the idea. He's like, you should just, because my son is a character. So he was just like, yo, you should put your son on the album somewhere. So, you know, pulled the phone out and we just started recording him and just getting him to talk and say stuff. And, you know, that's what it was. That's what the reunion, when you just hear the laughter and, you know, all that stuff, like, that's just what that was a huge Kairos moment for me. If you listen to other songs from my previous projects, then you should know that I've had a really hard time dealing with, you know, my position and my ideal is my ideology as a father and shit with them good stuff. So, you know, that bringing that to a close, I felt like I had to share that. I can't just share one side. I got to share both sides.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I agree.
I think it leaves the listener in a state of whether it be worship, thought, like deep thought. I mean, it brings it all together. You know what I mean? Like if I had, like, I'm going to just say, like, I think I wrote it in the review, but the knock I had on We Live as Kings is that they take you to this place of, to me, it was like a crescendo with that Arena record. And then they came back with King and Me. And to me, that changed the whole way it ended. Like it knocked, to me, it kind of knocked me out of where that other record had taken me. Well, with Boomerang, Amy Winehouse, that's a bonus track. That's not on the final cut, technically, whatever. But the way Boomerang ends the album, it's like it leaves you thinking about what you just listened to. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is not an album that's designed for you to just say, let me see what I can pick. And, you know, if I got $3, I got a $3 iTunes gift card, what am I going to pick off this album? No, this is an album. It's like, all right, I got $3. Let me get $7 more and buy this whole thing or whatever. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yep. Yeah. Do you want to talk about Amy Winehouse?
Do you guys want to talk about Amy Winehouse?
I think Jaquille. I know Jaquille.
Yeah, you've been quiet, Joe.
I know Jaquille wanted to tackle that. So,
like Kill, you were very instrumental in that last stretch of the album, the very personal, and because a lot of those conversations, like, you know, Jaquille is like my best friend. Well, not like, Jaquille is my best friend. So she knows a lot of that. She knows all of that stuff. And she knows the stuff that I didn't write about. So I'm actually surprised that you didn't, you know, kind of divulge and say, well, I remember when he called me at 3 o'clock in the morning. He said,
you know what? It's because I don't know, like, being in this space, I understand, like, there's a level of transparency that you have to have, but there's also a level of intimacy. Like, you know, like the whole team that you've built, I do believe that there are, we all have intimate relationships with you, pause if applicable. And
Pause if actable. I'm stealing that. That's good. That's good.
I should have never introduced you to the pause game. That is one of my regrets in life, yo.
But it's like you don't know what to share and what, like, because I have, like, I've rocked with you for over 3 years. Like you are a good portion of my life. You are my best friend, you know? So honestly, for me, like, Kairos is like watching you give birth to yourself, you know? Like, because you have had so many trials and setbacks and victories and defeats, you know what I'm saying? And, like, being a part of your life, I've honestly, like, to share with you, like, I've honestly watched you have success and then throw success away, you know? And have it and take it for granted, or have it and want more and not know what you want more of. And so, like, the whole Kairos project, like, the honestly, the reason why I was silent and I wanted to just watch, like, for a second, I was like, I don't want to be, you know, nerdy music Jaquil. I don't want to be, I just want to watch, because I literally was watching you go through your Kairos moment, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's one thing for people to hear it, but it's an entirely different thing to see it, because a lot of times in music, it starts off genuine and then it ends fake. And, like, I can honestly say, if somebody asked me, I would say genuinely Armand has successfully moved through a Kairos moment, because it's not like Kairos moments happen that like, just because you've completed one doesn't mean that more aren't to come. But you're definitely like watching you, like, musically. And I've told you this, even with Dreaming Out Loud and some of the mixtapes, Haviland Savage, like, Haviland Savage hurt my feelings, because I don't know if a lot of people know, Haviland Savage was majorly about me. And so, like, that pissed me off. Like, I, you know, just
to make sure you put some bomb, like, bomb sound effects on the podcast. Like,
I've been saying I need a soundboard for a while, but I might have to. You need a
soundboard.
But, like, when you hear music, like, it wasn't that it was a bad thing, but it was, like, hearing the non-completeness of it. Like, it kind of leaves you, like how Kellis was saying, like, when you hear music or you hear somebody going through a trial and they're so vague about it, or they're, like, they don't tell you what they're, like, what the outcome was, it kind of leaves the listener in that same place that you left yourself musically. And you have touched every aspect of the things that you may have touched before, but now it's complete. Like, we're looking at, it was like getting to see you go through it and then getting to see you at the finish line after you got the medal and you showered and you're holding the roses. Like, it was beautiful. You know what I'm saying? Like, Kairos to me was beautiful, because seeing you go through the mud and, like, you know, your hiatus period was, like, crazy, because even though you weren't producing musically, like, you were releasing, and it was just like, you know, it was painful to go through it with you, you know? And so to see this full Kairos moment, like, the whole album is redonk. Like, I can't even fully express it, because of, it's more of an emotional journey as well. And I believe that this time, though, like, I believe that Kairos, you're going to take everybody on that journey with you and not leave them in a place, but take them with you and show them a way out. Like, I'm here for this. Sorry, I didn't mean to ramble.
No, that's real talk. That's real talk. Real talk.
All right.
Totally agree.
I'm done talking, because she totally, like... somebody else say something.
Well, you know, man, I believe, like, I just came with this analogy. Anybody who knows me, I love analogies. There's a lot of music that's being made, you know, whatever you want to label it, no matter the genre, that to me is like flower music. Mm. Flower music lasts for a certain amount of time. It may bloom for a while, but eventually it's going to die out. Mm. I call this tree music.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, the seeds were planted a long time ago. The roots took them a minute to grow, went through some things. But you see, you're starting to see a full-grown tree, and you're going to see this tree for a long time. Like, you know, cats don't... I don't really think cats make music for longevity anymore. People, like, make social media albums.
Mm. Right. Wow. Yep. Say that.
So I think this is a museum album. So I can't write a review on this one because bias would be all.
Yeah. Right. Right. Like you can't.
No, you totally can. Like I'm sort of counting on it. Actually, no, I'm just playing.
No, but like I look forward to hearing what people have to say about it. There's a handful of albums that I could name that could even be anywhere similar to what I believe the Lord can accomplish with this album. Like there's only a handful of albums from the past 5 to 10 years that I could list. There's a lot of albums that I've even jumped on Twitter and said, man, this is hot. I like it, but I probably stopped feeling that way after a few weeks. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? We've seen this grow from a baby.
Right.
And we're watching this one walk across the stage. You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I feel like a lot of people are going to sit here and if they really listen, man, like if they really listen, like if all you do is skim through music, you're not going to catch it.
Right.
But if people really listen, actively listen and say, okay, and here's the thing. If people have listened to Armand up to this point, they should know that he's not one. Like he's thrown out a couple rappity rap songs here and there. Yeah, we know that. But if you've been to his band, you know by now that that's not his aim. That's not what he does. You know, 3 Day Weekend. You know, he's like, man, I don't know why you like that album so much. Well, it's because I had to keep listening to even begin to try to understand what was going on.
Yeah. I really always forget that we did 3 Day Weekend.
Three Day Weekend was very interesting.
That's a special record, man. That's a special record. And I hope JR heard it because, like, that's random. But JR, you know, cats I see all the time, like, man, I'm bored with this, man. Everybody uses the same drum kits. Everybody uses the same approach. I'm like, you've been to ArmandWakeUp.bandcamp.com? So, yeah, I'm always plugging. But anyways, this album is a tree album. This is a museum album. This is a, what is it, time capsule album.
Yeah.
And I'm out.
Definitely.
And that's my last point, and then I'll let Smurf and Doc wrap up. I'm glad that you said that because I wanted to do that. That was definitely an intent. Partly because, and you know, Smurf says this all the time, like, or I tell Smurf all the time, like, if I never do an album again, I'll be perfectly fine with that. And I know I'm probably lying to myself, but it's just the things that I learned, the process, all that stuff was just, it was so difficult. It was very hard. So like, I wanted to make sure that if this was my last album ever, that I left it all on the court. This is my last game. I'm not going out like Kobe with my Achilles. Like, I'm going to go out my last game. I'm going to be Magic at the All-Star game. Even though he came back after that for a little while, but nobody remembers that. So, you know, I always want, like, you know, we all have our records that we go to, you know, whether it's records that we worship to or just records that we kick it, that we kind of just always go back to, and they sound did 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And that's what I wanted to do with Cairo. So the fact that you said that means a lot to me, because that was definitely a goal that I was hoping that the Lord would accomplish through me. And, you know, looks like he did.
Yeah.
Yep.
Definitely. I don't want to interrupt you.
Go ahead. I'm done. Go ahead.
But like everybody touched on basically what I was going to say. I think you pull the listener along with you on that journey from the first song to the very last song. And, I just appreciate like the realness that you display on your music, because it's just kind of crazy, like how you say, you know, if this was my last album, like that, you know, I'll be good because, you know, I put everything down on the line. I've been listening to this podcast, Combat Jack.
Yeah,
and what I've noticed about rappers. Like they be like, what are you working on today? They be like, oh, I got this album that's dropping June 1st, and then I'm working on this album that's dropping June 2nd, I got this out. I'm like, man, like you have a lot of, you know, and it's crazy because if you think about it, there's no way you can put your all.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Especially you can't put your all, especially if you're working on multiple albums. And then for you to like just put your all, you put your all in this. Like I seen you, you know, coming in tired. Like, man, let me record this song real quick. Like I seen like, you know, I seen you going through it, and I mean, it's inspiring just to, you know, it's pretty dope. It's pretty dope. I just think Kairos is going to be, it's a great body of work. So,
yeah.
And thank you for letting me, like, I gave Smurf hell. I know I did. I know that's your character. I know you like, nah, it's cool. I know. Even if I didn't, I know that Smurf, there's so many things that each one of y'all did that y'all don't even know that y'all were doing. You know what I'm saying? So I don't even want y'all to say, well, you accomplished this. Because I don't accomplish this without you guys, flat out. Like, none of this, the album, if I did the album on my own, it does not sound like this at all. It's a really good album. It's a good album. But you guys, I want y'all to treat it as if this is your album, this is your victory too, because, you know, like I me bugging y'all about stuff, conversations that I've had with you guys that y'all don't even know, things that you said, we could have been talking about, you know, me and Kelly's chopping up just about music or just about phones and all this other stuff, but it's like the things that you say, yeah, the things that you guys say apply to so many different areas. Yeah. Like,
yeah,
I take it to heart and I apply it elsewhere. So, nah, man, I really appreciate you guys stretching yourselves out, making yourselves available. Good God. I mean, I put all four of y'all through hell. I know I did. So, you know, I'm just grateful that y'all, you know, kind of stuck it out with me. Pause. So.
Man, I wasn't going to hesitate because, man, you know, first song, Rearview. Was it Rearview?
Yeah, it was.
Dashboard Rearview. I think it was the first time I heard from you.
You know how old that song? Like, you think that Walking Contradiction is old or 2 years old? Doc sent me Rearview. We put out Rearview Dashboard in 2010. Rearview Dashboard, those beats were made in, what, 2007? Man. Or 2006?
No, not that early.
It was definitely 07 because I was in the military when I got those beats. I know it was at least 07.
When did American Gangster come out?
End of 07?
That's when I made that beat.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's just I just jumped at the chance to be able to help out. So, you know, I'm still a wannabe A&R. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
I hope this launches you into that because you definitely have that gift. So.
Man.
Doc?
I'm tired, man. This record, this album has tired me. I have like a permanent sleep defect, but it's the thing with this album is, I guess I would say it's about, you know, we really sweat the details on this one.
Yeah.
We went back and changed so many small things just because we cared. The other thing I would sort of say is, you know, I was sort of forced to learn how to like do things that I didn't even know I could do with audio, right? Like, I learned how to master. Who knew? You know, I learned how to mix records I didn't think I could mix. In an era of where, I mean, heck, on the show we tell people all the time, like, make shorter projects, like, don't do all this stuff. Like, we did like a throwback. Sweat the details, care about every last thing. Like, we obsessed over, like, how long does it take from one track to transition into another, right? Like, I can't even tell you the things that we obsessed over. We did it because, like, it's true, you know, like, this is, like, it's a product. It is not a, let me download one or two songs. Like, it is an entire self-contained thing. And I'm proud to be a part of it.
Word. I think we can conclude, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, we didn't really even do our normal spiel at the beginning. We just sort of jumped right into it. But, you know, follow all of us on Twitter. But, you know, please check out past episodes of the show on iTunes. You can just search for Clock Radio Speakers, rate and review us. You can check the site out, collectradiospeakers.com. The official Twitter account of the show is at CRS Podcast, all one word. Armand, I have no idea what you'll play this week on.
Maybe I'll play the album.
Are you just going to give it away?
No, it's not giving it away.
Kidding.
I might just play it.
I'm just kidding.
I'll just make sure that I render it at a poor quality. So if they decide to bootleg it, they'll get like a
32
gigabytes or something.
Just put an audio watermark on it.
Oh, just keep putting my kids over it?
No. Okay. You gotta bring back the barking dogs from the Stillmatic Advance. Like, throw some flex bombs. Like, we can get creative. No.
Oh yeah, we gotta do the barking dogs in the Stillmatic. Yeah.
Or you do those eat the gunshots.
Come to Jesus.
Yeah. But the Pulse Radio, 10 p.m. yep. to 12 a.m. Armand will be playing apparently parts of Kairos. Maybe all of Kairos. All
right. I'll play. Maybe I'll just do a whole Armand set. Maybe I'll just play 2 hours of me.
Now here's what you do. Okay, so take Vine. Obviously Androids, you don't have Vine yet. So we have an app called Stitch. Get Doc to do it, or whoever has an iPhone.
I do.
And Vine all 18 songs within that 6 seconds.
I love it. I love it.
You know. So.
Yo.
Vine Kairos.
Oh.
That's amazing.
That's a great idea.
That'd be dope.
Let's do it this weekend, eh?
Peace. All
right,
let's do it.
Yeah, the problem is, like, Vine is 6 seconds. That's like a third of a second per track, but hey.
Yep.
Let's
do it.
Yep.
Marketing genius. Or you could do a couple of different Vines. You could do, like...
I could do...
1 second of each song.
We have six songs or something.
But so
that's funny.
Pulse Radio. We miss anything else? I mean, sort of a disjointed ending. But we appreciate y'all listening. You know, this is like 2 hours plus. We hope that you appreciate. More importantly, this has been very Kairos-centric. But go download the album. Go buy the album. I have no idea when we're actually going to release this. So. Either pre-order or buy whenever you hear this. But armandwakeup.com.
This is Kairos.com.
This is Kairos.com. Go check out his Bandcamp. And
everybody should say that. Everybody should end with the this is Kairos.com.
Anybody? Well,
like 1, 2, 3 teamwork?
We can sing Kumbaya.
No. Like Mr. Van Driesen.
And I'm done.
Well, we appreciate everybody listening. We hope you all enjoy the album. And please, as always, let us know what you think about the show. Use the hashtag ClockRadioSpeakers. And Armand, you got anything else, man?
Nah, man. Thank you all. Thank you, guys.
All right.